The following is a production of DallasCowboys.com and the Dallas Cowboys Football Club.
How about them Cowboys?
Yeah! Go Cowboys!
Let's go, baby!
Are you ready for a break?
Yes.
Are you ready for a break?
Absolutely.
Ready for a break?
Yeah, and so much for that.
It's time for The Break on DallasCowboys.com.
We were on a break!
With Ambar Garcia, Brian Broaddus, Patrick Walker, and Derek Eagleton.
It is Tuesday, December 26th, 2023, season 19, episode number 95. Welcome to the latest edition of The Break. It is a Tuesday, but it feels like a Wednesday because the Cowboys are getting ready for a Saturday game, and we're talking about a game that happened on
Sunday.
We're all over the map. But today we're going to recap that game. It was an interesting game. Although the Cowboys lost, there were lots of things I think that came out of the game that were noteworthy that we're going to talk about today. And then tomorrow we'll jump right in and we'll start getting you guys ready for Cowboys versus Lions. We'll talk about the Lions offense tomorrow versus this Cowboys defense. But let's start first with the game versus Miami. Dallas loses 22-20. Tell me, storyline of the game. Let's go around the table. Storyline of the game. Patrick, we'll start with you.
For me, it was basically that this was Philadelphia all over again. It was a winnable game for the Cowboys. If you go in and you tell me that they're going to hold the Miami Dolphins offense to only one touchdown, I tell you, they win this game. But they did just enough to not win the game. Talk about the fumbled handoff to Hunter Lipke on what was an exceptional opening drive. And, of course, preceding that, Tony Pollard gets turned around. He can't get in. That matters as well. And then fast forward to the offense stalling, largely because your offensive line just didn't hold up. Chuma Edoga, we gave him roses for playing well. Earlier this season, he had a very, very bad day at the office. Dak Prescott pressured on almost half of his dropbacks and just couldn't get the offense going because of that. And then penalties. Here we are. Timing penalties. That final offensive drive by the Dolphins, you get the face mask on Damone Clark, gives them 15 yards, helps them start what was an eventual game-winning field goal drive. So it was the Philadelphia game all over again, and that's what makes it frustrating. This was not a situation where they got beat down like against the 49ers, where they got handled by the Bills because of penalties, and then that train went off the rails. They were competitive throughout this contest. Defense bent, didn't break. But ultimately, the defense broke because the complimentary football was not there.
Yeah. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, this tough loss, for sure. I think we saw some improvement from the Cowboys playing on the road against a team, a very competitive team like the Miami Dolphins. Patrick mentioned the opening drive and that fumble, the recovery that Dolphins get it and all that. And then they come back, CeeDee Lamb, he gets into the end zone, they touch. So they responded really, really well to that mistake,
right,
which was good to see. They were competitive, but it just wasn't enough. I did think the defense was doing a good enough job. We knew how many offensive weapons the Miami Dolphins have and how explosive they are, how quick. And the defense, I thought they did a nice job all in all, just being there fighting and doing what they could, but the offense just couldn't catch up. And I'm concerned. Right now it's like, okay, yeah, they lost. Hey, let's come back, rally up and all that. They're in the playoffs already, so you at least have that spot. But I'm thinking, how are they going to be able to survive with this O-line? I'm thinking about the O-line. I mean, I'm thinking, okay, what if Tyron Smith re-injures his back, or maybe he's out longer than we think? What are you doing to improve the offensive line? Because that look that we got in this game, I don't think you're going to get very far with what you've got. And it's very, very hard to improve anyone's game. For example, Chuma, how do you improve that in the last couple of weeks that are left heading into the playoffs? So I like their performance as far as like them improving or showing signs of improvement on the road. But all in all, I am concerned about what the future holds with the current situation as far as the O-line health.
When they don't adhere to attention to detail, they're not going to win games. Mm-hmm.
That's just not going to happen. There were several times in this game. And by the way, Adoga wasn't as terrible as everybody says. I think the mental mistakes that he made were far worse than the physical mistakes that he gave. I think your quarterback made a couple of mental mistakes too. I think there were some hot reads that they missed on. I think one time they took a sack because they felt like that they were he had something picked up that wasn't picked up. You went away from creativity that you had early in the game. You went and focused on other areas of the game when you had an advantage with your receiver. You could have wore them out in this game with CeeDee Lamb. Again, attention to detail on that. Continue on trying to attack. Mo did a good job playing run defense against these guys, but you know if you're going to let teams break you down with blitzes and force you with mental errors, you're not going to win games. And it's simple as that right there, because they had ability to win this football game. And, you know, like I say, you don't give up huge plays on defense. You got fortunate, though, on the one play that Hill dropped earlier. That could have been a touchdown right out of the gate coming out of there. But, you know, what did they do? They moved you with motion to get create matchups. They did it a couple of times during that game. You know, you just got to be ready for that stuff. And it goes back to, you know, the penalties are a problem. The things that, like I say, when you're supposed to blitz pickup, being in the right spot, quarterback moves the back to one side, blitz comes from the side that he moves the guy away from. Those are all attention to details you got to have to win football games.
You mentioned Dak Prescott. He was 20 of 32, 253 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interception, a 107.9 rating. But, Brian, I agree with you. I was going back this morning and I was watching a lot of those pass plays. And one of the things that stuck out to me, which hasn't been something we've noticed a lot from Dak recently, he's been really just hot and he knows, very decisive with the ball.
Yeah,
I don't think he was in that game Sunday. I think there were a number of different times where they ended up with a sack or he ended up with pressure because I don't know if he wasn't seeing it or if he was anticipating that a guy was going to like cut off the route, but there were times it appeared, again, from our vantage point, looking from that top camera, you know, you're not behind the center, so you don't know. But from our vantage point, it looked like there were guys that were open. And all he had to do was just let it go, and it just seemed like for whatever reason he was a bit more tentative. Did you guys see the same thing, and what would you attribute that to?
I think that, and at times I did see that, excuse me, I think that some of that goes to just the offensive line struggles, and I don't think he felt comfortable in much of that game on his drop back. So it likely disrupted some of his timing, some of his reads, and just his overall window of operation. So I did see that a few times where it's just like, okay, if you get rid of the ball right now, then that's a first down potentially. But he, you know, the pressure was coming at several points. Talk about Chuma Edoga. And I mentioned this on my hit with 105.3 The Fan this morning. When it comes to Chuma, I don't think Chuma got beat up physically. That's not my issue with Chuma. My issue on Chuma is choosing assignment. Like, you don't let Bradley Chubb run free to your quarterback trying to help out Tyler Smith. Let Tyler Smith do what Tyler Smith does, and you get Bradley Chubb. So I think the amount of pressure that Dak Prescott felt in that game just completely kept him unsettled, and because he never was able to settle in, it just was not the usual Dak Prescott.
Yeah, but they missed a shot too. Remember the play that Turpin scored on, where they put him in the slot and they ran vertical, and the Commanders tried to carry him with the safety down in the middle. Went to the same play, ran the same play against the split safeties, and Dak didn't throw the ball. And I don't for the life of me know, because to me, you put Turpin in that situation to run that play. You clearly have a mind that they're going to play two safeties back there, and we're going to send Turpin on a vertical for a 40-yard dash, and nobody's going to be able to pick him up. And for some reason, Dak just did not throw it. And the play, like I say, it's designed for him to throw the ball, lay it out there, and let Turpin run underneath it. There were several times where he pulled the ball down. And one time, Gallup is on the outside. He's going to throw the slant. Yeah. Gallup gets mugged. I mean, Ramsey is just beating him up. And then so now what happens? You know, he falls down. Now Dak forced to have to kind of try and find play, go forward, or throw it someplace else. Yeah. You know, I mean, there were some blitzes that I think there were a couple, like I mentioned, the hots. You know, one time, like, he's got Cooks, he's got a blitzer coming on into his face. And it's like you see Cooks sees it's going to be hot.
And he's Dak, waiting for it. I know exactly what
Dak pulls it. And you're like, God, just hit him.
Yeah.
You know, it's a 5-yard gain, but at least you're not taking an incomplete or a sack or a negative play there.
Yep.
So you wonder, you know, what was going through, because there was a period of time very early in the game, I felt like he saw what he needed to see.
Yep.
And they did some really good things, and it wasn't until the end of the game that they started kind of getting Lamb back in the game, you know. And I think that's where all of a sudden, you know, it's the 3rd and 6. I'll give you an example of that. Finally, McCarthy is able to scheme Lamb open, and it's trips to the right. Tolbert motions away to the sidelines, and now what they did was they got the corner out of the way, and then the corner route comes to the sidelines. Ball goes right there. There you go. That's the kind of stuff that, you know, you saw it early in the game, but then for 2 quarters you were like, what offense is this running, or you know,
yeah,
what offense is this playing football right now?
Yeah.
And you know, whether it was the line, the receivers, the quarterback, the head coach, the play caller, there was just a disconnect for a couple of quarters there, and then they kind of figured things out at the end.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably a little bit too late.
There was another play I noticed early on in the game. And this is, again, where I question, you know, was it a situation where the pressure really got to Dak? Because some of these things were happening early enough in the game where it was before he was just, you know, feeling that extra pressure. But there was one play where literally I kind of stopped it. I stopped the play, and you've got Dak standing in the pocket. He's got the ball up.
Yeah.
And there is Gallup on the outside. Right. He's got 2 steps on the outside deep if you want to go there. Right. You got another guy. I think it was CD in the slot that's coming across the field. Yeah. He's open. Like, yeah, he's coming clear of the window. So there are these opportunities. And Dak is ready to throw, and then he pulls it down for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And then ends up in pressure or a sack. I don't remember what happened at the end of the play. But it wasn't a good turnout.
Yeah.
And it was a situation where he had the play. And that's what I think was, to me, that's what I take from this game, is that as much as we want to say the offensive line didn't hold up, Dak, I think, has to take just as much accountability on that, because I think he was just a little bit not willing to pull the trigger all the time.
But with that comes into the mental game of things. When you go into a game knowing who is protecting you, it's going to change the way you're thinking, because now that's an added thing that you're trying to take account for. Like, it's very different. I'm trying to find a scenario. It was like someone that cuts my hair all the time, I'm gonna go in like easy, I'm not even gonna say anything, worry about it, mind be on my phone, as opposed to someone that's new cutting my hair, I'm like freaking out and just like looking over my shoulder the whole time. So I think, I hate putting all of the blame on somebody, but I think, because if you look at everything, that's really the only change that has happened. You still have the same weapons on offense. You have been playing really well the past few weeks, and you've been clicking. You've been accustomed to Mike McCarthy's play calling, but then as soon as some element changes in the O-line, and he's played with that before, but I don't know. I'm just trying to find the reason as to why, because there's no injuries there on him. He's still the same Dak as he's been. There's nothing else that has happened to be big.
They run a double screen. They run a double screen on the play, and you can see after the play, Dak is pissed, and Lamb is pissed. They run a double screen. Dak makes the decision to throw it to the left with 3 blockers when he's got 4 blockers.
And he said after the game, I probably should have gone over.
Yeah, see, that's the thing about it. When you have a game where you're kind of struggling with the protection, screen's a good play. Screen's a good play, especially when you get upfield. But what happens, give the Dolphins some credit. Dolphins take Chubb and Van Ginkle, and they put them wide, and they kind of put them off the ball. So they're like anticipating you're probably going to run either slant or screen.
Mm-hmm.
So they're playing the defense like, so maybe it's something you check out of. Maybe you're thinking like, okay, I can't get my blocker out there. You know, I can't get Adoga out there on Chubb. You know, I can't. So I've got to think of something. But, you know, like I say, 3 blockers one side, 4 blockers the other, and you have a clear advantage, but you choose the 3-blocker side.
Yeah.
Those are the kinds of things. Attention to detail in a game will get you hurt.
I'll tell you this too, Amber. You say nothing had changed, and you're right from the standpoint of the personnel. But I do think part of what I saw, at least my opinion, is he was playing a defensive coordinator that clearly Dak has a lot of respect for. Yeah. He talked about it after the game. They asked him about the question about CD and not having CD. And CD said in the locker room he thought it was – he agreed with a reporter that it was kind of strange that in the second and third quarter he was not used as much. And they asked Dak about that, and Dak says, I mean, strange is a fair word, I guess. He said, but you got to remember that we're playing a defensive coordinator that's very, very seasoned, and he has ways of not letting you continue to do the things that you were getting success with. And so, yeah, he said he could fall. He had a way of kind of fogging things up. And it makes me wonder if, again, you take a play or two where he shows you something that kind of jars you, and does that make you a little more tentative now? Does that make you now think a little bit more about those throws before you make them? And that could be what we were seeing. I think there are – that could be a part of this. And then the way they play defense, too. They have one of those kind of defenses that – they have a lot of guys in the line of scrimmage. You don't know in any given play who's coming, if all of them are coming, if none of them are coming, right? And I think that can also cause you to be a little more tentative. So I think the difference was not necessarily in the personnel he didn't have as much. I think it was more about who he was playing and the way they play.
Maybe that fumble with Hunter Lipke that early in the game, that could have played a role in his mental aspect of thing of now he's trying to be a little more hesitant and not trying to risk throwing an interception or something else.
I wouldn't say that on that particular play because they bounced back from that. And like you
well,
said,
they
got,
did.
Yeah, got the CeeDee Lamb, the big gainer, CeeDee Lamb touchdown. And then, you know, you take the lead, and at that point, your defense, because keep in mind, even your defense responded to that. Yeah, they gave up the 50-yarder on third down to Waddle with the, you know, backs against the wall for the Dolphins, and you hate that, but they didn't break. They kept it to a 57-yard field goal by Sanders. So your defense was holding, not the penalty-wise, but your defense was doing what they needed to do. And as an offense, all you needed to do was build on that CeeDee Lamb touchdown and then start to create distance. And then now you put them into the blueprint that you want them into, which you want them to pass the ball, because you've also shown that you were doing well in the run defense, right? Coming off of a horrible game in Buffalo, you did well in containing Mostert and A-Chain and Jeff Wilson. So all the Cowboys offense had to do was continue to find ways to put up points. But when you go, they had that sequence where it was like third consecutive punts. Yeah, your defense is bending, not breaking, so it's field goal for the Dolphins, field goal for the Dolphins, field goal for the Dolphins. But the whole time that's happening, you're looking at your offense not put up points. So it's like, okay, punt, punt, Aubrey, punt, 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 Aubrey. And you're like, you're not going to win this type of a game against this offense, because sooner or later, this offense is going to do what they did with that no huddle. And it was just lethal. The no huddle at the back end of the first half, the hurry up at the back end of the game for that game-winning drive. Your defense is tired. You got to help them out and compliment them. So kudos to the defense. I mean, obviously they did break eventually, but if the complimentary football was there and that offense had put up points, then the Cowboys win this game.
I just didn't feel like that they did anything defensively different. You know, to me, the drastic move to try and take Lamb out of this game would have been to walk Ramsey over there. I just kind of felt like there were a couple of different times where they passed him through zones, buzzed linebackers in front of him, you know. But to me, it was really about Howard, Ramsey, and Kahoo, those guys covering him. You know, you didn't see stuff really on the back end or where, like I said, my answer to that was like, if I'm thinking Lamb's killing me, I'm thinking, God, I've got to do something different. I think the blitzing of the linebackers bothered Dak in this game. I do. I think that you know, like you said, being around the line, when are they going to blitz? Mm-hmm. And on the flip side of that, Dallas didn't blitz Tua enough.
Yeah,
that's the problem. When you look
he
at
sat back there a lot.
When you look at his metrics when he was facing pressure or blitzes, it's like 2 of 5.
Yeah.
You know, and they, but you know, the no blitz was, and that's to me, Dallas's MO is pressure and pressure. And to me, I kind of feel like they missed an opportunity with that, because you could have, I think there were times where when he faced that pressure, you could see he was clearly not interested in standing there and throwing the football.
And Tua also had some under pressure and not pressured throws that were just bad.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, oh, that was a bad throw. That throw sailed. Who was he throwing to? Like, no man was in the vicinity. It was just bad throws. And that was not under pressure. And then to Brian's point, when you look at the how things flipped, okay, so we talked about how Dak Prescott was pressured almost 50% of his dropbacks. Tua was pressured only 25% of his dropbacks. So three quarters of the time, he was back there comfortably operating. You can't have that. You got to get back there.
Not with those weapons he's got out there, too. Like those, if you got time to run, like that's going to be a problem.
If Dallas was going to win on the defensive side of the ball, it was going to be taking advantage of that offensive line. You know, and there were times they did, and I just don't feel like there was enough of getting after Tua, you know. And I think that Dan and them got a little nervous about the big playability of these receivers, and I can clearly understand it. Covering Waddle is not easy, you know, and especially if safeties, you know, Wilson a couple of times in the game, you know, you're wondering they're in cover two, and you're like, bro, you're supposed to help here. You know, what are you looking at inside? There's nothing there for you, you know. So, you know, Hooker, those guys, they try their best, but you know, when you're dealing with speed and all that, sometimes you just get mesmerized. I think Dallas got a little bit of that in the secondary yesterday.
All right, we're gonna take our first break and come back. We will talk about the rushing offense. Tony Pollard, Hunter Lipke, we'll talk about all that and what the Cowboys were trying to do and maybe how effective it was or was not. We'll talk about that when we come back. DallasCowboys.com radio.
Todd thought it would be secure to jog in the cheetah savannah. Todd believed the big cat repellent he bought online was reliable. And now, Todd is trying to be faster than this cheetah that can run 80 miles per hour. But the good news is, Todd has AT&T 5G that is fast, reliable, and secure. And he learned the best thing to do is stop running and toss her the backpack with the beef stew. AT&T 5G. Fast, reliable, secure. It's not complicated.
5G requires compatible plan and device. 5G may not be available in your area. See att.com/5G for you for details.
Cowboys fans, after that move, we've just coined the term Rowdy Replay. Let's roll back the tape.
Okay, there's our mascot Rowdy cheering on the boys. And now he's on his phone on his Bank of America mobile banking app?
Staying on top of his finances with his virtual financial assistant, Erica.
Bank of America's digital tools are so impressive. Cowboys fans just can't stop banking. Learn more at bankofamerica.com/can't stop banking.
Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome back into Dear Doctor, the show where I answer life's questions with an ice-cold can of Dr. Pepper. Sheila, let's hear from our next caller, would you?
Dear Doctor, my friend supported me during a tough time, but what's the right gift that says, thanks for being a shoulder to cry on?
Okay, this one's easy. I say, give her a delicious Dr. Pepper. Nothing says, thanks, girl, better than a one-of-a-kind soda. Yes, any Dr. Pepper flavor will do. Now, just a reminder that I don't need to be a real doctor to know that Dr. Pepper is the one you deserve.
They say champions are remembered, but legends are never forgotten. United Ag and Turf offers a winning lineup of John Deere equipment built to tackle any challenge on and off the field. Legendary John Deere tractors, combines, residential mowers, commercial mowers, compact construction equipment, Gator utility vehicles, and a full line of golf and sports turf equipment. United Ag and Turf, the official Ag and Turf equipment supplier of the Dallas Cowboys. Visit unitedagandturf.com to find a location near you.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Back to the break.
How about this? DeMarcus Lawrence is Dallas Cowboys nominee for the 2023 Walter Payton Man of the Year award presented by Nationwide. Help Tank raise funds for Dak Prescott's Faith, Fight, and Finish Foundation by casting your vote on NFL.com/Man of the Year or tweet your support using hashtag WPMOY Challenge. Voting ends on January 8th. Vote for Tank. Guy played well yesterday, too.
Yeah, he did. Welcome back. This is the second segment of the break. We're live from SWBC Mortgage Studios at the Star. And this segment is brought to you by Blockchain.com. All right, let's talk about the running game. You've got Tony Pollard Sunday. He has 12 carries for 38 yards, a 3.2 average. The team overall had 25 carries for 97 yards, a 3.9 average. I have a big picture question for you guys. Is this rushing attack good enough for the Cowboys to get to where they want to be?
It can be, not playing the way it did on Sunday, obviously. But we talked about prior to Sunday, we talked about how things had started to come together for the rushing attack for the Cowboys. Now, a large part of that was based on the continuity of the offensive line and the health. When you had Tyron Smith play 7 consecutive games, that helps. But when you look at what happened on Sunday, you know, we were talking about it during the break. We were talking about it after, you know, on the flight home. We were talking about it after it happened. Tony Pollard has to get in on that that touch on the 1 yard line. You can't get turned around like that, especially by a defensive back. Like, you can't. You got to get that in. And then what happens after that? You get the botched handoff to Hunter Lipke, which goes to a rushing attack issue as well. And then we know that Rico Dowdle is battling the ankle injury, but we've also seen him perform admirably despite the ankle injury. So they only have 2 touches, 4 total yards. Like, where was Rico Dowdle on the ground? So if that is what they present on the road in the playoffs, the answer is absolutely not. If the trajectory that we saw them on, even though they got walked by the Buffalo Bills, but you liked what you saw from Tony Pollard in those games preceding that as well, if that's the version of the rushing attack and the offensive line that they take on the road, they do have a chance in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they've improved. That's one thing. But it depends what kind of offense are you playing. What kind of offense are you getting? Are you getting the offense that plays at AT&T Stadium? Because in those scenarios, you barely even need to run the ball. Like, they have so many explosive plays in the passing game that sometimes the run becomes a little bit secondary. Like, you don't really think about it because you just don't really need it. They've just playing so well in the air. But we know that's not always the case, especially when you're going to have to play away from home. That kind of disappears at times. And sometimes the one thing that you can rely on, or in the past, not this year, but we know how essential and how important the running game can be for your offense. So right now, as it is, I think you've had plenty of time this season to kind of get a better running game going, and it hasn't been the case. And I think that, sadly, it's going to bite them in the butt at some point. I don't want to say that, but once they start playing away from AT&T Stadium, I think, and we've seen it already, we've seen games where you wish you could have relied more, like even in Buffalo, you wish they would have ran the ball so much more, and at times it was working, and then it just, they kind of went away from it. So right now, I think they've been okay, but it's just, you're going to need, I love complimentary football, and you're not always going to be able to throw the ball in the air, pass it. What happens in a game where they do take out a CeeDee Lamb again? So it's those scenarios where I do find some concern, and it goes back to the O-line health. I always bring it back to the health of the line and how that affects not only Dak Prescott, but also the running game. I think that has a lot to do with kind of the issues they've had this year.
I think Mike told you what he thought about the running game when he started the second half. After the Dolphins go 3 and out and you get the ball backed up and he hands the ball to Pollard one time, they get 1 yard, and then they throw the ball 2 other times after that, you know, and then you get a blitz and there might be a hot question there and stuff like that. But yeah, they had no confidence coming off the goal line. He said he had a poor plan when they were backed up, you know, and they were dealing with that. So, it was encouraging against Buffalo, not so encouraging against the Dolphins. And I think there's a lot of things that happened for those two quarters. I think the play caller lost his way. I think the line lost their way. I think the quarterback lost his way. I think the running game, whatever existed, might have had, lost its way. They just did not have it. They did not have the – when their running game works, it's about rhythm. It's about – they kind of get it going, and it supplements some of the other things. They do it. They do it with jet sweeps. They do it with crack tosses. They do – you know, we just didn't see that. You know, there's some creativity to their running game, and they can get it. They can get it working. But, you know, in this football game, it was just a non-factor at all. And no, absolutely, they cannot win a single playoff game, much less a regular season game, if they run the football like this.
Yeah, it's interesting because, Brian, I was going to point to the play. I thought this is where you were going. You said there's one play that told you that.
Yeah.
But that fourth quarter, first and goal, and they decide that they're going to back him, throw the ball, and here you go, sack. Yeah. And I'm like, when they first got first and goal at the one, I was like, okay, here we go. You pound the ball in. There's no reason not to, right?
Maybe the Lipke fumble freaked them out in that.
Maybe, but take Lipke out of the game,
they
right?
Tried to run, they tried to run. It's funny because you say that because everybody, it's like a hard play action right, and you know, and Adoga's wrong. He doesn't block out, and so now you get the sack, but. They're trying to, they're playing cute football.
Yeah,
they're going to try and run the tight ends across the other way and just flip it to them in the corner.
And to me, that's where I look at it. And I was watching this game, the game last night, San Francisco and Baltimore, and what is very apparent to me, and I think right now those two teams are probably the two best teams in the league. I think you can arguably throw another team in there, but I think they've consistently throughout the year been the Rams are looking really good. We've been talking about the Rams, man. They're coming.
I know.
On.
I keep. They're coming. The Rams are my hope to go beat Philadelphia and then go to San Francisco.
Yeah, take San Francisco out.
If Dallas is going to be the fifth seed, I've talked to people. My dream is for. The Rams to be the seventh seed and just go wreck shop a couple of times and take people out along the way.
The Rams can absolutely smoke Philadelphia.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, they can.
So I think that's the part where as I was watching that game last night, I was like, the difference between those two teams and every other team in the league to some degree is the style of football they play is extremely physical.
Yeah. Mm.
They line up in those situations and say, we're better than you. We're going right over you, and we're going to score, right? And that's the part where I think when you have to do it the cute way, to me that says something about what you think about your ability to just line up and be able to physically impose your will on another team. Right. And I think that's the difference. And that's where I was like, it made me start to question how good I think this running game really is. I can't think of a game this year where the Cowboys have said, we're gonna run. We're gonna rely on our running game, and that's how we're gonna win.
No, it had not.
And by the way, there've been some games where they probably should have done that, but they haven't. And that's where I wonder: is this running game even capable of being that for them in a game where they're gonna need it? Because that's gonna happen if you're on the road in the NFC in the playoffs.
I think the head coach talked about in the offseason of wanting to try and be like that, and then he realized he couldn't, and then he had to adapt. And
is that because of the offensive line or the running backs or both?
I think the injuries along the way have been a problem. Now they played seven straight games where they've had continuity, and they've been okay. But man, I think this offense is really built to throw the football myself, especially when the offensive line's healthy with Lamb and Ferguson, those guys, Cooks. They're built to throw the ball, and I think McCarthy realized he had a better chance of moving the ball and scoring points throwing it than he does running it.
I think my biggest problem with the rushing attack is kind of exactly what you're alluding to, Derek, in that it's the go-to-go packages. So that sequence of Pollard getting turned around and then Lipke fumbling, that's one and a half yards to go. If you go back and look at the combined statistic of how well or not well the Cowboys have done with goal to go, that's been kind of that their biggest Achilles heel, because first it was red zone. Oh, they can't score in the red zone. So then they shrunk it and said, okay, well, we can score in the red zone as long as it's not goal to go. So then when it became goal to go, they kept running into like a brick wall as far as you hand it off to Rico, and it stopped right there at the one. You hand it off to Tony, it stopped right there at the one. And now you're thinking, okay, you're going to Dolphins and you say third and short on this opening drive, hand it to Lipke, conversion. Third and short, hand it to Lipke, conversion. You're like, they got it.
They figured it out.
Nobody had a problem handing the ball to Lipke on the goal line.
Right.
Nobody did.
Yeah, because after what he done,
fumbled.
You were like, okay.
And then he fumbled.
Then we all went, oh, damn, how stupid are we?
Then it becomes a mental thing for the coaches. They're like, okay, well, now when you get goal to go, we're not going to hand it to Lipke because we're shocked. Right? Yeah. We're not going back to that. But then Pollard, well, what happened the last time we gave him the ball? He got turned around.
Yeah.
So you drop back. And it's to Lamb. And then he is out of bounds. But then thankfully on that particular drive, Cooks was able to come up with it. But I think it's the go-to-go package. That's their biggest Achilles heel. And if you can't punch it in from 1 or 2 yards out with your running backs, that's a problem. That's where it really could become a problem.
Also, the defenses. Opposing teams are going to be using more of their resources on the passing game and trying to protect and cover the receivers. I don't think right now you've put anything on film that scares anybody as far as their running attack at all whatsoever. So going into whoever you're facing, they're going to just focus.
It's CD. If it's CD taking the hat off, then.
Yeah. But yeah, and I agree with you, Derek. It's clearly a passing offense. That's what it's become now, but It does. It's just very unfortunate because you do not want to become a one-dimensional team and just have to always rely on the passing game, because there will be, and we've seen it, situations where you're going to have to run the ball. And if you ain't scaring anybody, if you're not breaking blocks and finding the holes and kind of escaping and going for it, I mean, that's going to be definitely a problem. What is Zeke doing?
He's still employed, so
we can't talk about it.
We will just say that Zeke is on a team that's not going to be in the playoffs, but he's had some opportunities.
He's still employed. Done some just wave hello to Zeke.
Unlike your team,
I miss you.
Unlike your team, he got to win this weekend.
Yeah, right. He did.
Keep it
all right. Let's take our final break. Let's come back. I want to flip over to the defensive side of the ball. And Jerry said something very interesting this morning on 105.3 The Fan with Sean and RJ. He mentioned a little bit about Micah and maybe why Micah's not getting those holding calls. That was an interesting comment. We'll talk about them come back. This is DallasCowboys.com radio.
Todd thought it would be secure to jog in the cheetah savannah. Todd believed the big cat repellent he bought online was reliable. And now Todd is trying to be faster than this cheetah that can run 80 miles per hour. But the good news is Todd has AT&T 5G that is fast, reliable, and secure. And he learned the best thing to do is stop running and toss her the backpack with the beef stew. AT&T 5G. Fast, reliable, secure. It's not complicated.
5G requires compatible plan and device. 5G may not be available in your area. See att.com/5G for you for details.
Don't put off getting your oil changed, Dallas. Take 5 Oil Change. A proud partner of the Cowboys is faster than you think. There's no appointment needed and no waiting room. Yep, you heard that correctly. Take 5 is so fast, you don't even have to get out of your car. You can take advantage of Take 5's fast, friendly, and simple service at any of their locations across the Dallas area. And remember, at Take 5, you stay in your car because they're faster than you think. Take 5, the official oil change of the Dallas Cowboys.
It's the official men's skincare brand of the Dallas Cowboys, Jack Black. And right now, Cowboys fans can get 15% off their $75 order. Plus, because every deal needs a playmaker, your order will include a free 5-piece skincare set and free shipping. The Jack Black Playmaker is 4 of Jack's favorites and a full-sized intense therapy lip balm. Make a play for the Playmaker at getjackblack.com/cowboys with the code CowboysVIP. That's getjackblack.com/cowboys with the code CowboysVIP.
They say champions are remembered, but legends are never forgotten. United Ag and Turf offers a winning lineup of John Deere equipment built to tackle any challenge on and off the field. Legendary John Deere tractors, combines, residential mowers, commercial mowers, compact construction equipment, Gator utility vehicles, and a full line of golf and sports turf equipment. United Ag and Turf, the official Ag and Turf equipment supplier of the Dallas Cowboys. Visit UnitedAgandTurf.com to find a location near you.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Back to the break.
Sean Polite needs your help. He is your 2023 Cowboys Fan of the Year, and now he does really, really need your help. After I mention that again, vote for Sean to be given the ultimate title of NFL Fan of the Year presented by Captain Morgan by casting your vote at NFL.com/Fan of the Year.
Welcome back. Final segment of the break, live from SWBC Mortgage Studios at the Star. Let's talk a little bit about Micah Parsons. This morning, Jerry was on 105.3 The Fan, and he mentioned that he was asked about why maybe Micah is not getting those holding calls. I think it's been now 38 quarters since the last time he had a holding call.
I've done these numbers. Huh? How many holding calls do you think the Cowboys as a unit have drawn this year?
It's got to be single digits.
Yeah, I was going to say it's not over 10, is it?
16. Okay. But 7, they didn't have a holding call in this game, right? So make that they played 15 games.
Yeah, Thomas Smith had one.
No, on the defense. Didn't have one, defense, didn't draw one this game, right? Didn't have one this game.
Yeah, right.
8 of their 15 games have gone without a holding call. More than half their games have gone without a holding call.
Which is amazing for a team to get as much pressure as they do.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. How can you be one of the most pressure teams in the National Football
the
League?
The most, yeah.
Yeah, and not draw more holding calls. Yeah. 16 total for the year. That's amazing to me.
The interesting thing was Jerry said on the air this morning, which I'd never really heard someone from a team or league articulate this, but basically what he said was the refs essentially won't call holding if they don't think the player could have gotten to the quarterback. And Jerry's argument is that may work for the vast majority of the players in the league. The problem is Micah is different. Micah is special. Micah has a burst and a speed that can close so quickly that it's hard to make that determination if he's 3 yards from the quarterback to say, well, he couldn't have gotten there if he wasn't held, when fact is he's so fast that he probably could have gotten there. And they're trying to legislate it based upon how they're legislating everybody else, but it just may not work for Micah.
Yeah, but I don't understand how – and you know, we sound like we're bitching about it, you know, really. But I don't know how you can watch games and, like, arms around his neck.
Yeah.
You know, arm around his waist. Mm-hmm. Hands inside or hands outside the frame, I get it. Hell, they had Zach Martin got his helmet knocked off and was pass blocking in this game, and they didn't call it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, literally, he's like, whoa, bro. I mean, Wilkins just knocks his helmet off and he's pass blocking still on the play, and they don't call it. You're like, now, okay, how do you not see that? But the thing, I understand hands inside, that's a hard call. But hooking a guy, you know, grabbing him around the neck, rodeo maneuvers, and you don't call it? That part I don't understand. I don't know how the officials each week when they get their tape and you miss this one, you miss this one. It's like every week they probably see Micah Parsons go, damn, he gets held a lot. You know, that would be my impression. If I was one of these officials, I'd be going, gosh, dang, they miss a lot of these holding calls in this guy. You know, and you're kind of looking for that. Mm-hmm. You know, but you're right. As fast as he closes, because that roughing the passer penalty, as I told you guys in the break, that was super close.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so explosive when you stop the tape. Ball's gone, and he is literally, his foot is right behind Tua as that ball is out of his hand. That's how.
And usually there's grace for that kind of situation. Again, as long as you're not driving the guy into the ground or something like that, there's grace that there's a little period from when he gets rid of the ball. Like, yeah, he did. That's why I was like, I don't know
Micah
if I love the call.
Said post-game, they said he was trying to punish the quarterback.
Which I didn't get that. He pushed him.
Yeah, what's it?
That was momentum more than
that. Yeah, he's not going to – this poor guy's not going to get calls. He's just not.
It's amazing.
I don't know how these officials on a weekly basis review the game tape and don't see that.
Well, I love what Micah said, because what Jerry is saying today to the fan echoed what Micah said 1-2 weeks ago, I believe, in an interview with the media about the lack of holding calls. And he said, Micah did, that the officials are telling him the same thing that Jerry just said. He was like, well, you weren't going to get to the quarterback. And Micah said, and this was a quote, he said, you couldn't get to the quarterback.
Yeah.
Don't tell me what I can't do. Yeah. I can get to that quarterback. Or maybe someone else can't get to the quarterback. Right. But he's like, I can get to the quarterback. So let me do my job and you do your job, which, end quote, which kind of goes to my next thing. It also is, these officials are human.
Yeah.
And I've said this to several colleagues as well. And we love Micah to death. And, you know, his podcast is enjoyable, and he's always enjoyable with the Q&As, but the officials are listening. They're listening when every week he gets on the mic, and we understand his frustration, and it's justified. It is right. His cause is proper, right? But he has to let the others, Stephen Jones on the competition committee, let him fight that battle. Jerry Jones fight the battle. The front office, Mike McCarthy, the coaching staff fight the battle. I think now, because it's so egregious, the lack of holding calls, I'm starting to wonder if it's the human element coming in, where these officials are hearing what Micah Parsons is saying and being like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy that.
That's the use of power.
But you can see it.
You cannot silence people. Like,
oh, no, and I'm not trying to.
And I get it. Like, sometimes Micah goes on a rant and he'll get on Twitter and say all kinds of things that maybe you'll be like, hey,
he's not wrong. That's the thing. Like, he's right.
Let him voice.
It's just...
Because anybody that was in that position and on the field and having to deal with that on a constant basis and feeling like, damn, I cannot catch a break, like it's constantly happening, the same thing, you're gonna be mad, and it's okay to let it. And I'm tired, like, what gets me frustrated is this whole thing, like, Quit blaming it on the refs. Deal with it. That's just what it is. Well, no, it doesn't have to be that. Like, it's not, you're not going to get any change if you don't speak up. So speak up and keep talking about it.
And to that RTP call, that roughing the passer call, and I said this in the press box, the reaction that Micah had, it wasn't because of that RTP call in and of itself. Micah is fed up. Yeah. And then the optics he's of frustrated. The fact that
oh, no, I don't
you
blame
won't,
him.
You yeah. won't call them for holding me, yeah. but you'll call me for that ticky-tack RTP right. in a game this close on the road. So all of it's kind of boiling over, and because we've seen Michael react and be upset at refs, but he exploded to the point he had to be pulled back by a teammate to potentially
Tank
avoid, you know, yeah, to avoid potentially accidentally making contact with the ref, and then you get fined yeah. and ejected yeah. and might maybe suspended. So it's at that point, and because it's at that point, and the whole world is watching now because these types of reactions and non-calls are on film, something has to be done. So my thing with Mike is I'm not saying, you know, silent because his cause is right. We're sitting here beating the drum for it. Everybody's beating the
just
drum
like,
for
let
it.
Somebody else and voice that.
At this point, we've heard you say it, Mike. Yeah. We get it. All uh-huh. of that's on tape. But to do it weekly, now I'm starting to wonder. This is just me starting to wonder. I'm not making accusations, but I am allowed to wonder. I'm starting to wonder if these officials who are human beings, who are emotional people, are starting to see this and say, oh, well, if you're saying we can't do our job, well, then maybe we don't see this hold. So I'm saying it. You can't convince me one thing doesn't play into the other thing is what I'm saying.
Well, that crew, that particular crew, their number one call that they've made all year has been offensive holding. Mm-hmm. That's their number one. And the one, I mean, they miss with Micah. But the one that Cotton had on Clark that ended the game, basically, that needs to be called. And that's Sean Hockley not following the play, not seeing, and that's the side judge not seeing the play as well. They missed a bad holding call right there that could have backed the Dolphins up and maybe given you a chance. I know the way their field goal kicker was making field goals, it was probably a moot point. But at least you've got to call the game that way. You know, if you see a guy getting tackled when the ball going right at him and then like a defender not being able to make a tackle because he was getting tackled, that's you got to call right there.
Honestly, and I hear what you're saying, Patrick, and I think in a lot of instances that makes sense. The reason why that I wouldn't go that far is because I look at the refs and I think, first of all, as a part of their livelihood, they are judged and graded yeah. based upon getting the calls right or wrong. I don't think they will risk their grades being lower just to prove a point to a guy. You know what I'm saying? I personally don't think so. Because that affects, by the way, mm-hmm. that affects your ability to get other games and more preferable games. It affects your ability to be able to playoffs, Super Bowl, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Are you willing to give that up just to make a point to a guy? I don't think so. I think it's one of those things where, honestly, I think it's a judgment call. And I think their judgment is skewed by the fact that they don't think he can get there when, quite frankly, he could get there. And that's the difference. I really believe that when it comes down to it, you know, I agree. I think they're human, so they're going to make mistakes. But I think a lot of this, there's some gray area. It's even with the roughing the passer call.
Yeah.
They are told to ref it in a way to where if there's any doubt that maybe it could have been roughing the passer, throw the flag.
You got one, they got one.
Yeah.
That's how it worked in that game. But I'll tell you what, the league last night, they put Bill Vinovich on that crew in that game last night. Bill Vinovich will let you kill each other in a game. And you know what? I applaud Bill
Sign
Vinovich.
Me up.
Give me every week of Bill Vinovich because he will let the players decide these football games.
No doubt.
Games.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. All right. We appreciate you guys, John. So we'll be back tomorrow. We're going to jump into Lions, talk about the Lions offense. This is going to be an interesting matchup because two things have to kind of come into play. They're at home, yeah. but they're playing a really good team. Yeah. This is going to be an interesting one. We're going to find out a lot of things about this team this weekend. We'll start breaking that down tomorrow. Till then, for Patrick Walker, Brian Broaddus, and Amber Garcia, I'm Derek Eagleton. This has been The Break, live on DallasCowboys.com radio.
Thanks,
Ben.
So you make a good point there.
This has been a production of DallasCowboys.com and the Dallas Cowboys Football Club.
How about this, Cowboys? Yeah!